All right, so let's try it again. What's key element number one?
Build relationship.
Build relationship, right? So the better you are at key element number one, the more likely it is that your counselee is going to open up to you and share. And I would just say this. In the biblical counseling world, you can't have too much information. Okay, you can't have too much information. This is by far just the best part of helping you. And so key element number two, let me move forward. Key element number two is get the facts, okay? Get the facts. You cannot have too much information. And so Jesus was a fact-finding creator. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews 4. This is what Jesus modeled. Hebrews 4, beginning in verse 14, he says, therefore, we'll start in 13. And there is no creature hidden from his sight, but all things are open and laid bare to the eyes of him with whom we have to do. Therefore, because of this, since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin. Therefore, let us draw near with confidence to the throne of grace so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. And so he is a fact-finding creator. What do we see in this text about him finding, knowing the facts?
No creature hidden.
Yeah, nothing's hidden, right?
Yeah.
Oh, and how we think that we're hiding. Right? That's tomorrow's sermon. Yeah. What else? What do we see in the build a relationship in this? He's been tempted in all things. Right? He gets it. What do we see in the relationship side of this?
He sympathizes.
He sympathizes. Good. Yeah, he's gone through it. And so John 2, let's go there. John 2, verse 25. Just one verse. Verse 24, we'll start there. He says, Jesus, on his part, was not entrusting himself to them, for he knew all men, because he did not need anyone to testify concerning man, for he himself knew what was in man. So how did he demonstrate appropriate fact-finding in this?
He already knows.
Yeah, he knows. He already knows, right? Listen, the obvious answer is the right answer.
Yeah.
Okay? Not trying to trick you. What about the case of the thirsty woman, the woman at the well, John 4? Like, she wanted to argue theology, right? What did she say when she said, when I'm saying this, she wanted to argue theology?
It was about where do we worship?
Yeah, you people worship over there. Can you imagine if we said that today about a group of people? You people? You can't say that, right? You people worship on that mountain. Okay, so her case is she needed forgiveness. Why did she need forgiveness?
Sin.
Yeah, what sin?
Five husbands
and the one she was living with now.
Not her husband,
right? And so there's a lesson in this. Don't get sidetracked. Okay, don't get sidetracked. When you're getting the facts, don't get sidetracked. There's a tendency in every counselee to deflect and change the focus. I tell everyone I'm counseling, I say, you have to be honest. The temptation that you have is either to withhold information or to lie. It is so difficult to help somebody. It's impossible to help somebody when they lie to you. Okay, when they withhold information. But sometimes you have to dig. Right, I get that. Sometimes you have to dig. Sometimes you have to investigate. Ask good questions. And I think when I say ask good questions, ask good follow-up questions. Okay, ask really good follow-up questions. Okay, let's look at the case of the selfish saint. Matthew 10. Let's go there. Matthew 10, verse 17. I had somebody complain last week, a week before, about our counseling. They said it's like a Bible study. Thank you very much.
That's the best compliment we got.
Yeah,
here.
Amy.
I'm gonna say when that, you're talking about building relationships and trust, and then you're talking with somebody trying to get the facts, and you don't want them to lie or withhold information. That's a huge trust thing.
Yes.
Especially if you're going to see them in church the next day and be sitting there wondering.
Right.
Who knows?
Yes.
I'm not going to tell that because yeah. I don't know what's going to yeah. happen. You know, that's yeah. a good thing. You know, to kind of work through, and that's what mm-hmm. that building a relationship and the trust
yeah.
so that they know that it's not going to go where it doesn't need to go.
Right,
and
right.
Sometimes they don't even know themselves that they're maybe not being, maybe they don't realize that it's heart issues or whatever yet.
Yeah.
So maybe they don't even realize they're not being truthful.
And sometimes we've lied to ourselves so much
for
that
so
we
long.
Actually think it's true.
Exactly.
You know? You know what's sad to me is when part of our inventory sheet, our getting the fact sheet, one of the questions on there is, can we contact your pastor for more information? I'd say 90% of them say no. That's sad to me. I think, well, that's your shepherd. You should be going to them, not to us. One of the reasons we're doing this training and wanting other churches involved is a lot of our people are coming, other churches are sending their people to us for counseling, and then they stay at our church. And they stay there because we're shepherding them, we're caring for them, we're doing what their pastor and leaders should be doing.
Should be.
Right? Should be doing. Mm-hmm. And they're not, and so they send them to us. And I think we don't want to grow our church by people coming from other churches. That's never been our goal. But if I've got $50 in this pocket and I take it out and I put $50 in this pocket, have I gotten any richer?
No.
No. So if this person comes from this church to come over to this church, like the kingdom of God hasn't grown because of that. And so we want to train churches so they can shepherd their own people.
Sure.
Right? That is our goal. That's our desire to do that. So let's look at the case of the selfish saint. Mark 10.
Pastor.
Yes. Oh, sorry, Max, go ahead.
This is about some people, some pastor, most of the time, they don't keep confidential.
That's, and the elders or deacons should handle that, right? Yeah, that's very true, very true. They don't keep it confidential, yeah. So I'll show you in the weeks ahead that we actually have a consent to counsel thing, what you can expect from us, what we expect out of you. We have people that sit in our counseling. That's part of part of the consent to counsel is, and Janky, you've done it, right? So Janky, I'm counseling, me and Rebecca or somebody are counseling together, and then Janky sits in the back of the room and observes and listens. And we put on the consent to counsel, like we want to train people. So that's part of that. If somebody wants to be a part of that, like you can sit in with, my counseling or Rebecca's counseling, Janky here soon, to be able to get some of those observation hours in. And it's really helpful, right? Joe, would you say that's helpful to sit
Definitely.
In?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
To watch it happen.
Yeah, yeah. Janky, I know you've sat in on a bunch of them.
Oh, yeah.
I always tell them, I say, this is Joe. He's just observing. He's not actually part of the counseling. We're training him. And Joe knows that if I have to give him a piece of duct tape to keep over his mouth, then he's good with that.
Why'd you do that?
Because he
had that problem too.
Yeah. So his job is just to be quiet. He's the
and it's hard.
It is. but let's so Mark 10. Let's start in verse 17. I'm sorry, I'm in Matthew. Mark 10, verse 17. As he was setting out on a journey, a man ran up to him and knelt before him and asked him, "Good teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" Boy, you would think that's just the easiest answer for Jesus, isn't it? I mean, here's the four spiritual laws. You know, here's EE. This is how they did it. Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? How do I get saved? Jesus said to him, why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone. You know what he's saying here? Are you calling me God? You know the commandments. Do not murder. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Do not fraud. Honor your father and mother. And he said to him, teacher, I have kept all these things from my youth up. Looking at him, Jesus felt a love for him and said to him, one thing you lack. Go and sell all you possess and give to the poor, and you will have treasures in heaven. And then come and follow me. But at these words, he was saddened and he went away grieving, for he was the one who owned much property. So this was the selfish, now we put in quotes, saint there. So he had a false concept of good. In his mind, good meant outward conformity to the law. We get this all the time. I'm doing all the right things, right? I'm being good. And so you need to, so the lesson there is that a test will often confirm a suspicion. Okay, so you need to ask good questions. Then you have Nicodemus. Okay, the case of the righteous ruler. Okay, he had a need, and he knew that he had a need. What was his conversation with Jesus like? Being born again. Yeah. He came at night. Why do you think he came at night? Yeah, a little secretive. Yeah. Jesus was like, are you the teacher of Israel and you don't know these things? So he knew. He had a need. And so the lesson there is to meet the need of the person in front of you. Sometimes that's just saying, hey, so what's the biggest thing stressing you out right now? If there's one thing we can take off your plate, what would it be? And sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. Okay? Sometimes in abuse situations, you have a lady, and it's not always women, but typically women, who, for her safety. Right? We need to get her safe. That's part of what we do. But he had a need, and he knew it. And so the lesson is meet the need of the person in front of you. But what ends up happening is we have these temporary, why do we have permanent casual relationships, is what Tripp called them. Permanent casual relationships. Well, the first reason is we're too busy. Well, and I know I say it all the time. Busyness is the idol of our day. Everybody talks about how busy they are, as if busyness is a standard for righteousness.
Yeah.
You know? Like, hey, I haven't seen you in church. I've just been so busy. Hey, I'd love for you to come to our Bible study again. I've just been so busy. Hey, doing what? I asked a young lady recently. I said, it's been a few weeks since I've seen you in church. Is everything okay? Just checking in with you. You know what her answer was, right?
Busy.
I've been so busy doing school. I think school on Sunday. You know? And so busyness, we have to be careful of that. I typically will tell people, you know, it's going to take you 15 to 30 minutes every single day, right, to do this, to do the projects for growth. Number two, why do we have these permanent casual relationships? Is we think we're unique. We kind of think that nobody really is experiencing what I'm experiencing.
We have a verse for that.
Yeah, what's the verse?
1 Corinthians 10:13.
By the way, if you come to counseling with us, that's your first homework, is our project for growth. First project for growth is 1 Corinthians 10:13.
Nothing.
And what I'll say is, and Liz actually sends it out, what she says is, read through 1 Corinthians 10:13. There are four promises in there. Underline the four promises. Circle the one that you need most and be ready to speak about why you circled it. Okay, let's go there real quick. We'll just give an example of that. 1 Corinthians 10:13. So, and the reason we give homework, this is before their first appointment. right? And so before their first appointment, we give them a project for growth. And the reason we do that is because we want them to be used to walking in there having to be prepared. By the way, if they're not believers, it will amaze you at the answer they will get to this verse. It's the craziest thing. You go, how did you get that from that? Yes, ma'am.
How many people would you say come to you as unbelievers? Like,
no, that's a good question. I don't know that I've ever thought about that, but just off the top of my head, I'd probably say 30 to 40% are unbelievers. Realistically, it may be more.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people... Yeah, a lot of people think they are, and they have the right answers. And then when you hear testimony maybe 2 years ago, they'll say, you know, it really was in the counseling that I committed my life to Christ.
Yeah.
So, but I'd say from the jump, probably 30%, 40% are unbelievers.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tammy.
What was the question that you asked them when they're reading this to do?
Yeah, so I say there's four promises in there. Underline the four promises. And circle the one that you need most. And then be ready to speak about it. So 1 Corinthians 10:13 says, no temptation has overtaken you, but such as is common to man. God is faithful. He will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape also, so that you may be able to endure it. So what are the four promises? What's the first one?
He's faithful.
No temptation.
You're going to go through temptation.
Say again?
You're going to go through temptation.
Yeah, you're going to go through temptation, and it's not going to be too big for you, all right? Okay, what's the second promise?
God is faithful.
God is faithful. Next promise.
He won't allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able.
Okay, not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able. Fourth promise.
Provide
the way of escape.
So that you can bear it.
Yeah. You know, Martha Stevens, when she was our counseling secretary, we would be able to, we could read the intake form and tell you which one they'd circle from there. It's really obvious. And so people wanting divorce, they've been sinned against. What do you think they pick out?
They want the way out.
The way of escape. Yeah, yeah. People who are overwhelmed, depressed, what do they want?
God is faithful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. So it's pretty good. So that's a good first kind of thing, right? Before you even start discussing, is to have them work through that. By the way, most counselees will paint themselves as either the hero or the victim or both. Okay? Hero, victim, or both. And so why do we have permanent casual relationships? And number three is we are blind to our own sin. Boy, it's easy to pick out the sins in others, isn't it? Yeah, we don't really like picking out ours. And the last one, number four, nobody asks. No one asks. And so here's what happens so often, and I say this in the Christian church realm. What happens so often in this is that everybody thinks everybody's okay. Because we tell them we're okay. Right? And so there's not really, you know, we talk about, it's not just important to know people, it's really important to be known by people. Right? To have those people in your life who know you, who will ask, how are you doing? What's happening? Will ask the follow-up question. Are you lying to me right now? You want people like that in your life. Well, you don't want them, but you want them. You know what I mean? You need it. And so what else does the Bible say about the importance of information gathering? This is just good. Go to Proverbs 18. Proverbs 18 needs to be a go-to for you. Not necessarily for other people you're counseling, but for you to know how to counsel well. Remember, everybody who comes in, I shouldn't say everybody. usually the person who presents themselves first will present themselves as either the hero, the victim, or both. And so Proverbs 18 really helps us in this. And so number one, right, you want to listen for facts. Look at verse 13. He who gives an answer before he hears, it's folly and shame to him.
That's true.
Okay? Here's what I tell counselees, especially in the marriage realm, is if you come without your wife, let's say, and you're talking to me, I say, listen, here's what Scripture teaches, is there's always two sides to every story, and if I give you counsel, right, before I heard the other side, I'm a fool. I don't want to be a fool, so I need to hear the other side. Okay. Sometimes I'll get somebody who wants counseling, but their spouse doesn't. And so I'll say, can I call them and ask them to help me to help you? Right. Which people are really anxious to do. Right? So you just, my job is just tell you what's wrong with them. Right. That's what I want to know. Right. But it is so helpful for that. And so you want to hear both sides of the story.
Sorry, can I ask you, how often does that happen? Or does people and say, I'm going to go for counseling?
Hmm? Well, there's people in here that's happened to. I'd say probably half dozen times that's happened.
I would say most people that don't have the background, like 20 years in Word of Faith, like you just don't have the background to know that it's a hard issue.
Yeah.
So you kind of come in not even realizing.
Yeah.
And even when it's offered, you're kind of like, I'm not real sure about that.
Yeah. Again, it's easier to look at everybody else's sins, but if they would just change, then I would be okay.
Right.
Right. No, it'd be like I no longer drink alcohol, but I'm addicted to pornography. You'll just end up exchanging. So you listen for facts. You listen actively for facts. Look at verse 15. The mind of the prudent acquires knowledge. The ear of the wise seeks knowledge. Okay? So keep acquiring. Keep asking. Keep actively listening. And then Proverbs 18:17, listen actively for all the facts. The first to plead in his case seems right until another comes and examines him.
Number two, listen.
Okay? So listen actively for facts. Listen actively for all facts. So the question then becomes, how do I get the facts?
Interrogation.
What not to do.
Yeah. Well, I was in an accountability group one time, and a group of men, and so, you know, we had a list of questions, you know, four or five questions we'd ask each other every week, which always kind of just made me laugh, because I think, well, you know, if a guy's like, you know, cheating on his wife, and I say, are you cheating on your wife? And he's like, nope. I mean, if he'll cheat on his wife, you think he'll lie to me?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So anyway, we had this group, and I noticed it was like week in and week out, it's the same thing over and over again. Still struggling with this, struggling with that, you know? And, actually got to the point where, I'm doing really well with these things, right? And so I thought, I think they're lying. And so I wrote letters to all their wives and said, can you guys just share? This was before I did any counseling or anything. This was my zealous without wisdom days. early. I'm late in my zealous without wisdom days now. So I wrote letters to wives, like, you know, the truth about these things. And so I came to our men's group, the accountability group, next week, and I gave them to all the guys. And I wasn't in charge. It was just sometimes I do stuff like that. And so I gave them, and I said, I think it'd be good if we just read from our wives. I don't think I wrote to you, did I? Yeah. Zealous without wisdom, right? So they had, like, how embarrassing, you know. We never met again after that. So. Yeah. They're still friends. But that's why I say the accountability group side of things, right?
Right.
I mean, if you'll do these things, you think you'll lie.
Right.
You know? And so, anyhow, you want to get all the facts, and don't go too far in that. But there's a personal data inventory, PDI. I probably said that a million times, a PDI. There's an example of this in your notes. We also have one on our website. And so, and I would say this, if you are a pastor in another church and you want to utilize that, right, you are more than welcome to direct them to our website. And then in the last page of the PDI is a little box that says something. Is there anything else you'd like your counselor to know? Something along those lines. You can just say, please forward this PDI to Pastor so and so or whatever, utilizing this from the counseling training. That's really easy for us to do, and we would be more than happy to do that. Or you can give them a sheet. What I've found, just experience-wise, is for some reason people will be more honest and more thorough on a computer, writing on a computer, than they will when they have to write it out with their hand.
So you have it on the computer?
We do. We have it on our website. So if you go to cbcocala.org, /counseling, yeah, you can fill it out online, and then it'll come to me and Liz. But if we see that in there, we'll just forward it over. And honestly, like if you want to do that and you get that and you say, I would be more than happy to sit with you and say, these are the questions that I would ask on the PDI. These are some of the follow-up questions. Janky would do it, right? Rebecca would do it. Like we will gladly sit with you and help you to be prepared for the first time you meet with a person. So, yeah, happy to do that. All right, and so formally, that's a formal way of doing it. There's also the five question sheet. Okay, again, these are all in your notes. Why are you here? Some people, it's so funny, some people will say, it's like, well, because my wife made me.
Yeah. It's true.
Or I want peace, or once they change, everything will be fine. Right? And then the next question is, what have you done about it? Like, why are you here? What's the problem that brings you to counseling? What have you done about it? He said, what's the problem that brings you to counseling? One guy said, my wife is. He said, what's the solution to that? He said, I told her. That's not good. what have you done about it? And you could ask, like, where'd you, you know, so what have you done about it? Where did you hear that would actually be helpful? Right? Who told you that? What would you like me to do? That's really important. What's my role in this? Most of the people, and this is part of our PDI online, most of the people, they'll say, well, I just want you to listen. We need a mediator, right? And by the way, being a mediator is different than being a referee. Usually they don't want a mediator. They want a referee that tells them they're right. Okay, throws a flag on the other person. And then we ask, what are you willing to do? Okay. So and the way it looks on our PDI, we say, are you willing to be teachable, honest, do your projects for growth, and be in church every single week? Right? If they can't hold up to that, we don't meet with them. You guys may do things differently. For us, that's how we do it. And so you can use a biblical counseling worksheet. So I think, Sandy, you write, don't you? Okay, I do everything on my computer. I got my computer right there. I can type without looking down, and I listen and I type. That works really well for me. But like I said, Sandy writes. Janky, do you write or you?
I do both.
You do both, okay.
Ooh. Yeah. Simultaneously?
That's talent.
You are super. I knew that.
Yeah. So these are the formal ways. Okay. This is the counseling room. This is not necessarily the coffee shop, right? Visit with somebody. So there's an informal side as well. Ask good questions. Okay. Ask extensive questions, relevant questions, open-ended questions. Okay, I don't know what's on your notes and what's not. Okay. The next one. Differentiate between what and why. Outer man and inner man stuff. What do I mean by that?
Can you go back?
Yep. Good questions means extensive questions, intensive questions, relevant questions. Listen, this you're not lecturing them. Okay? Ask good questions. I think it's Carnegie. Anyway, people love to talk about themselves more than anything else. Ask really good questions. Be good at follow-up questions. Don't ask yes or no questions. Right? Make sure they're open-ended. Informally, all right? Differentiate between what and why. It's outer man and inner man stuff. Okay, what do I mean by that?
What happened, the facts, and mm-hmm. why did it happen?
Yeah, the motive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, remember, we're trying to get to the heart. Do what I do because I want what I want. Okay. What are different types of kinds of facts? Well, spiritual facts, physical facts, relationship facts, emotional facts, action facts, conceptual facts, historical facts. Yeah, it's all on there. I just read it through really quick. Do you have to ask all of these questions?
Not at the same time.
No, right.
Overwhelm somebody.
Yeah, that can be really overwhelming. Well, let's ask some spiritual facts. No, you're just talking, right? And you just ask good questions. It's not a lecture. And so what do you do with the facts? Say again?
Try to identify hard idols.
Yeah, try to identify hard idols. Good. What else do you do with these facts?
Put them in the circle thing.
Yes. Yes, the three tree diagram.
Are you able to identify whether they're even truly a believer?
Yes.
Or any of that would even apply?
Yes. You'll know if they're believers or not. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Double check the facts, make sure they're true.
Okay, good. Yeah. Yeah, because you want to verify, right? Hero or victim? And, yeah.
When you're gathering the facts, there's also feelings that they're sharing. Are those facts because it's a fact that they're feeling that way?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That would be the emotional side.
That would be the emotional side, yeah. Yeah. And
which leads back to the heart.
And we're going to, yeah, we'll talk about that a bit because, you know, there's so much emotion usually, and we don't want to just discount that, right? We want to deal with it right there. This guy's like, facts, not feelings. You know, he's like, just don't quote Ben Shapiro to me. Yeah, the facts don't care about your feelings. That's what he told her.
Oh my gosh.
But the facts always, I mean, the feelings always lead back to the heart idol.
Yes.
So that's telling.
Yeah, yeah. But are emotions wrong?
No.
It's just wrong to be led by your emotions, right? Yeah. Right. It's wrong to let them determine things.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, our emotions, we should. I mean, he gave us a peace that surpasses all comprehension. Right? There's joy. There's laughter. Right? There's anger.
Jesus wept.
Yeah, there's weeping. Right? There's mourning. There's, I mean, all of these things. It's like that's all part of who we are. It's the makeup of who we are. And so where would you put fact-finding then on the model?
Number two, the heat. I mean,
yeah.
The heat.
Yeah, certainly.
Heat.
There, right? And up here, the circumstances, these are the facts, right?
And their responses.
And then the responses are facts, yeah. So you could either there or there, right? We're assuming that the responses are idolatrous things, but yeah. All right.
Do you ever find somebody that comes in is actually responding the appropriate way? Or generally not?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we do. Yep. Yep. And it's really difficult, right? Because they then become Self-righteous. Yeah, that's the word. Yeah. No, well, I shouldn't say they become that. But the tendency is to go there.
Right.
Yeah. Especially when
look
you get
me,
a...
Look what I'm doing.
You get a... somebody who's, let's say, been in an adulterous relationship for 3 years. Right? And then you have the wife who knew nothing about it. That's hard. You know? So, realistically, 95% of the problem is his. 5% hers, potentially, right? At some point, we got to get to that 5%.
Right.
I would not do it early.
I agree.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Right? At some point. So what I always do is I draw a circle, and I'll say, this circle represents 100% of the problems in your marriage. How much of that would you say you contributed to where your marriage is right now? What percentage of that? And oftentimes I'll have somebody say 2%, 10%. You know what guys usually say? 100%, because I'm the leader. And then I say, well, if you say that, that means your wife's perfect. And they say, well, I ain't 100% then. So here's what I do. So, and honestly, it doesn't really matter what they say, what numbers they say. If they say 1%, I'm 1% of the problem. I've contributed 1% to the downfall of our marriage. As I say, from this point forward, let's commit to this. We're going to take 100% responsibility for our 1%. Okay? We're not going to focus on the 99% of his. We're going to focus on the 1% of yours. Right? Be wise on when you say that. Because if you have somebody who's been deceived for the last 3 years, cheating with her best friend, that's not a good early thing to say. Yeah, yeah. Instead, you want to mourn, right, with her.
Yeah.
All right. So at 11 o'clock, we'll hit it. Man, we are working great in time. I really want to give you guys time to do this case study. So. All right, let's take, it's almost 10 minutes. So.